Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Apple II Mouse Card by Andy Hertzfeld. Time frame June 1981. Burl's Macintosh design was clever and elegant in many ways, always using a minimal amount of hardware to its greatest potential. The mouse interface was a typical example, using just a fraction of the general-purpose 6522 Versatile Interface Adapter, or VIA chip, that Burl had incorporated. The mouse was connected to the 6522 so that it generated an interrupt each time the mouse was moved horizontally or vertically, in conjunction with a 1-bit line to sense the mouse button. That was it. The rest of the cursor positioning and rendering was done in software. Meanwhile, my good friend Bill Budge, who was an amazing Apple II games programmer, came up with an incredibly fast way to draw proportionally spaced text on the Apple II, along with a very fast graphics drawing routine. It was crying out for a way to interface the mouse, enabling a complete graphical user interface on the Apple II. Bud Tribble wrote the code that drove the Macintosh's mouse, but I was familiar with how it worked because I had to maintain it. The Apple III had a 6522 that I'd programmed the previous year to shift bits out to the Silentype thermal printer. I saw that all we needed to interface a mouse to the Apple III was a simple connector that would route the appropriate signals to the 6522. I asked Dan Kottke to wire up a connector. Once that was finished, it only took a few hours to write cursor routines and a driver. We had the beginnings of a full graphical user interface going on the Apple III with no additional hardware. It was exciting enough that I started helping Bill Budge flesh out the program, careful to work on it only after hours. Soon, we had pull-down menus working, and then a simple proportional text word processor came to life. However, Apple IIIs weren't selling very well. We really needed to get it running on the Apple II somehow. I talked to Burl about how to achieve this, and it came down to making a small Apple II expansion card that included a 6522. Burl returned the next day with a brilliantly simple two-chip design, the VIA chip, and a tiny dual flip-flop to synchronize it. In order to animate the mouse cursor without causing the screen to flicker, both the Mac and the Apple III code drew the cursor during the time interval when no video was being painted, the vertical blanking interrupt. However, the Apple II didn't have a vertical blanking interrupt. The most brilliant part of Burl's design involved how it synchronized with the video without running a wire to pick up the video signal. The 6522 had a timer which could generate an interrupt at a specified interval. The problem was synchronizing it with the video, since the video generation wasn't accessible to the processor. Burl solved the problem by wiring up the spare flip-flop on the expansion card to the low bit of the data bus, using it to latch whatever data the video was displaying so the processor could read it. To synchronize with the video, Burl had me write some code to fill the Apple II's frame buffer so the low bit of each byte was on most of the time, except at the end of the last scan line. I wrote a routine to sit in a tight loop, reading the latch. When the low bit changed, we would know the vertical blanking interval had just begun. The Apple II wasn't fast enough to keep up with its own frame buffer. A new byte of video data flew by every microsecond, which was only one processor cycle. It took at least 10 processor cycles to iterate through a loop, so we ran the risk of never seeing the low bit change. Burl had a way around this, too. If the loop time was relatively primed to the display frequency, it eventually had to slip into place. I wrote a 17 microsecond loop that fit the bill, and we were delighted to see it work perfectly. Bill Atkinson had previously told Steve Jobs that it wasn't possible to sustain a graphical user interface on the Apple II because of its relatively weak 6502 processor and WASA's convoluted frame buffer. But, after a little more work on the software, we had a cool little graphical user interface for the Apple II with a proportional text word processor in the summer of 1981. We thought we had a potentially valuable product on our hands. We were reluctant to show it to Steve, knowing that he would want to commandeer it, but he heard about it from someone and demanded to see it. We showed it to him and, unfortunately, he loved it. He also insisted that Apple owned all the rights to it, even though we had developed it in our spare time. Steve couldn't insist that Apple owned absolutely all of it because Bill Budge wasn't an Apple employee at the time. But Steve could claim complete ownership of the interface card, which he said was developed with Apple resources. Burl and I were pretty upset because we had completed the project on our own time and thought that we should be compensated, but it was really hard to argue with Steve, especially about money. We ended up turning over Burl's design to the Apple II division, but they didn't think the Apple II could deal with interrupts, even though we had demonstrated that it could. They wound up adding more than a dozen chips to the design. Steve made a deal with Bill Budge that eventually resulted in Mouse Paint, a Mac Paint clone for the Apple II, which was bundled with the mouse card. Burl and I got over things quickly, but some bitterness lingered, and the whole episode whetted our appetites for eventually working on our own.